This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Because it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Oh, Thursday has arrived here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. We're broadcasting live from inside the EFCO Development Studios here in Upper Lafayette. We got a tremendous show lined up for you today. Got two guests. We'll get to that. We'll also get to our poll question and so much more. But let's go ahead and begin today with some pleasantries, huh? James Mesh is here, looking dapper. Got a great hair day today. Let's just give it up for him, Dawson. Let's go ahead. Let's just go ahead and give it up for James. James Mesh. Don't call him Donut. Don't call him Jimmy. He is the man with the best of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi. James Mesh. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine on this Thursday.
You're looking good. You're looking sharp.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm doing good, too.
I was going to get to you.
Yeah, no,
I was going to introduce
you.
You are son of Iceman.
I am.
He's a very proud papa, by the way.
He is.
I mean, he may not tell you that all the time because he doesn't seem like a guy that's going to be telling you, you know, getting your head all big. But I can tell that the Iceman is a proud papa. He's proud of his son having not one but 2 degrees and all the work that he's doing in sports talk radio and in sports media in general. Dawson Iserloh is here as well.
I am here, and I'm good.
Yes.
Yeah.
There it is.
The officials in the NBA last night tried to sour my mood, but I'm just going to get over it. It didn't affect really all that much tangibly. It was more just peripherally, to use some words there. And so I'm going to get over that, and I'm not going to let it ruin my day.
James, those are the type of words you learn when you go to college and get 2 degrees, okay? Go ahead and take notes, bud. See, look, this is an advantage for you, James. You don't have to go get 2 degrees. You just need to listen to Dawson and just educate yourself that way, and you'll be smarter.
I need to read more books. I know, James, the mic buttons are sticky over there. I know I have it happen to me sometimes. I need to read more books, though. I do.
Yeah,
I had a book
fair.
That I started about... You know what I started it is when we went to SEC Media Days.
Ooh,
and
that's been a while.
And I am not done with it. And that's a problem. Yes.
So it's the same thing with Matt Miguez.
See, our guy Matt Miguez, friend of the show, made a New Year's pledge that he was going to read. How many books was it, James?
I think it was like all 12 that were on his shelf.
He had 12 books on his shelf, sports-related books on his shelf in his office. And he said, I'm going to read all these books this year. And we looked at him, we were like, really, bud?
We need a quarterly update on that.
I was like, bud. He goes, what? You don't think I can do it? I said, bud, why don't we bring that down from, say, 12 to, say, 2?
1.
And I believe as it's, today is April the 4th of the Lord's year, 2024. Our guy Matt Miguez has yet to complete one of those 12. So he's going to have some catching up to do. This summer, you know, I'm just saying, this summer.
Progress is not being made.
Progress is not being made. We do have two great guests, though, lined up today, and they're all about progress. They're all about doing their job in amazing fashion. Dawson, who do we have lined up for our listeners today here on this edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh, my friend?
Yeah, we'll start it off with Jack Cavavit. You've heard him talking college hoops, and we are going to talk the Final Four, but what we're also going to talk to him about is McNeese softball, because he was actually in attendance for a couple of McNeese games this week. So we're going from different angles there with our guy Jack. And then we'll have Les East, 12:30. He is the great reporter for Crescent City Sports, covering the Saints and the Pels. A lot to talk about with that Pels game. Saints off-season storylines roll on as well. So that'll be Jack in hour number one and Les in hour number two.
So we're going to cover it all. LSU, Louisiana Raging Cajuns, McNeese Cowboys, Saints, Pellies, Astros, everything that you want to talk about, we're going to chop it up today. But let's get things started, as we do every day at this time, with our today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans, but they can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces.
Order up.
Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
So again, college football, the never-ending quest to tear down the fabrics of what we have come to enjoy, they don't take any days off. So we have now what's can be described as an attempted Super League. Andrew Marchand and Stuart Mandel of The Athletic were both in on this, and they put out the article. Essentially, there's a group that's trying to pitch this. Now, here's the interesting thing about it. As you kind of look through some of the details of it, and I need to do a little bit more reading up on it, but from what I understand now, this is not Greg Sankey and the SEC or the Big Ten commissioner or the Pac-12. It's not those league executives who are coming up with this idea. This is an outside group that has this whole pitch to give. And from what we understand at this point, those leagues that we know have all the power, at least at this point, haven't bought into it yet. But the idea would be to create a Super League, and the pitch is to have somewhere around, all the FBS teams would be involved. There would be 80 teams in this league. 70 of them would be permanent. And so basically we would really sort out the haves and have-nots. And the other 10 slots would be used based on promotion and relegation. That aspect of the idea I actually love. I've talked about it on this show before. The idea of promotion and relegation, if you want to have a limited field, but at least give programs the opportunity to play their way up into that main event sort of situation, the way we have in soccer leagues, which I think, look, for, you know, soccer, take it or leave it. I know a lot of people in this area aren't big fans of it. I think it's a great way to reward teams and organizations who run their, you know, operations successfully by promoting them to the top leagues. And you can go from playing in leagues that no one cares about to playing in the Premier League if you play well enough on the English side of things. So anyway, that aspect of it I love, but they want to have 70 permanent teams that can't go down even if they go 0-12 every single year, because, if, again, the money is involved in this and the name brands would never sign off on being a part of it if that wasn't the case. So that's what it is. It's really, really interesting. But again, it's unlikely right now, but it's already, this is the first kind of group or person to put it out on the table what they want. And I do think, look, those leagues, they know what they want as well. And while this specific idea they're not really on board with right now, I think eventually they're going to get there. And I hope they don't, but I know it's happening. So at least in this situation, teams like the Cajuns, teams like Tulane, teams like Louisiana Tech would have an opportunity to be a part of this and at least be in the promotion system where they could get a piece of the pie on certain years if they played well enough. But all in all, I just think this is, again, really starting to tear at the fabrics associated with college athletics and what makes them great, which is obviously changing every year now, but this would change it a lot more than what it's been changed to at this point.
And my special for today is baseball and the Oakland Athletics. Their situation, if you will, is fascinating to me. They have an owner who's notoriously cheap, does not invest in his own ball club, does not invest in his own ballpark, does not invest in the local community, and somehow he was able to swindle, and I use the word swindle, Las Vegas to buy into relocating the Oakland Athletics to there. Well, There's some roadblocks in the way there, including Las Vegas's own mayor saying, maybe you should probably stay in California. It's not necessarily a done deal, as much as they like led us to believe that it is. And yesterday's news, or last night's news, rather, reinforces that. The Athletics, whose lease comes up after this year at the Oakland Coliseum, which, to be fair, is an absolute dump. They will now spend the next three seasons not in Las Vegas, because the funding's not there for the ballpark that they want to build, or rather that the owner wants the taxpayers in Nevada to build for him. No. They're going to spend the next three seasons, 2025, 2026, and, wait for it, 2027, playing in a minor league ballpark in West Sacramento. There you go. Going to be in Sactown for three seasons. The team announced Thursday that it would play at Sutter Health Park. That sounds like a big league ballpark, doesn't it? The home of the Sacramento Rivercats. I do love that name. Yeah. Oh, mentioned a little meow action there. The San Francisco Giants AAA affiliate. Yes. You heard me correctly. A Major League Baseball franchise is going to be spending three seasons playing in a minor league ballpark for a AAA affiliate of a team that they once played in the World Series in 1989, the Earthquake World Series. Okie dokie. The agreement includes also, by the way, just to go throw this out there, an option year to play in Sacramento in 2028 as well, should their new stadium in Las Vegas not be ready by then. The announcement will now officially end their 56 years playing in Oakland, playing in the Bay, where the team moved to from Kansas City starting in 1968, and where they have won four World Series championships and played in a few others. You know what this tells me? It tells me a couple of things. It tells me that the A's are a dumpster fire, that they're going to have to spend three seasons essentially renting someone else's minor league ballpark with an option for a fourth year, because as it stands today, they still don't have everything locked up, ready to go, to be able to play in Las Vegas. That's right. The Oakland A's burned everything down. The ownership said, Oakland, go kick rocks. We hate you fans. We did invest in our ballpark. We did invest in our team. And now we're going to take our little team and go to Las Vegas. But they may not really want us. And there may not be funding for them to actually build a stadium. So now, Oakland A fans, we're going to go rent a minor league ballpark in Sacramento, California for 3 years for an option for a fourth. Don't be surprised if that's the permanent home for the Athletics, because the Vegas thing may not actually happen, for one. And two, Sacramento has been mentioned as a possible expansion city. As a possible expansion city, because they're not counting Oakland's proposed move to Las Vegas. They want to add two more teams. And yes, we think of Nashville as the front runner and Salt Lake City as one of the other front runners, but Sacramento's there as well. And don't forget, did you remember what happened after the Hornets were forced to go to Oklahoma City because of Hurricane Katrina, and they were there a few years, and the NBA said, hey, this town can support an NBA franchise. And then they granted them the Seattle franchise and became the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just saying. Go ahead. You'll have those temporary jerseys for Sacramento Athletics, but they could very well become permanent. And you know what? Good for them, because the Oakland A's owner deserves it.
Let's continue the happiness of the show to start. And let's look at those Pelicans, because they won last night. Oh, wait, no, they didn't.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, they've now lost three in a row, and they are 1-4 in their first five games of the six-game home stretch. We knew that this wasn't going to be the easiest. Of course, they're having to play a lot of good teams. They had to play the OKC Thunder. They had to play the Milwaukee Bucks. That's the one win that they had. They had to play the Boston Celtics, who are now, they have 60 wins on the season. They had to play the Phoenix Suns, and last night they had to play the Orlando Magic. And in that game, it started off where it was back and forth, and the Pels were even leading for a majority of the first quarter. But as you got later into that quarter, it just got worse and worse for the Pelicans. They were losing for a majority of the game. There was some late game heroics by CJ McCollum. He scored a majority of his points, of his 32 points. Or 36, that's right. He did have 20 points in the fourth quarter. He had 36 points in total. He tried to make it a game, and it got somewhat close late in the ballgame. Once again, this is a reoccurring theme for the New Orleans Pelicans, where they try to make a late game run in the last couple of minutes of the game, but as soon as we get under 3 minutes to go, when it's within a possession or a couple of possessions, the Pels just go cold and they can't make a shot. That happened once again last night, and they end up falling to the Orlando Magic 117-108 to become 45-31 on the season. They are now in the play-in tournament if it were to start today.
Woof.
They're eight games behind. They are technically tied with the Phoenix Suns, but because they lost to the Suns the other night, they are now in the seventh seed. The Suns are in the sixth seed. Dallas, who has been on fire for the most part, they are now in this 5 seed, a half game ahead of both of them. And then the Pels, depending on what happens, they're only a half game ahead of the Sacramento Kings. Everything is not looking good right now for them. B.I., he is severely missed. This has not been the home stretch that you have been hoping for if you're the New Orleans Pelicans. And it's not like this is the easiest stretch the rest of the way, because you have a 4-game road trip after this game on Friday against the San Antonio Spurs, where you have to go to the West Coast. You have to face Phoenix once again. You then have to play a bad Portland team, which you feel better about. You then have to go to Sacramento, so that's going to be a big difference maker on what happens. Then you have to play Golden State, who are trying not to be out of the play-in tournament. They're trying to at least stay in because the Rockets are right there.
Are they? I don't know.
It kind of depends.
Yeah.
And then they have one last home game against the Los Angeles Lakers. So I remember the goal was, let's get to 50 wins, Pels.
50 wins, and don't forget a top 4 seed.
Right. That's fallen really quickly in the last couple of games. Not looking very good. That is also our poll question of the day, and we had asked you on Facebook and on X, will the Pelicans avoid the play-in tournament? 69% of you have said no. The other 31%, of course, have said yes. There's still that 31% that is very optimistic. They don't have to win all of the games, but you still need to win some key games, like against the Kings. You have to beat the Suns. And even though it's not likely that you'll win against the Lakers, I feel like that's a big one that you should be able to win as well. Spurs, they've been eliminated for a while, so you should be able to win that one as well. But that's also another tough matchup. So it really depends also, when is B.I. going to come back? That's a big one. When is B.I. going to come back? We're going to have to ask Les East in the second hour. But for right now, we're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back with more RP3 D'Lo Mesh after this, because we're going to talk about the savior of the New Orleans Saints just signed with the black and gold after this.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as you're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. As I had teased at the end of that first segment, the Saints did make a huge splash signing. I'm just kidding. No, it's not. His name is Kaliki Hudson.
Why did you do that to the people, James? There's people
A huge tease, and I got their hopes up.
And they're grabbing. I mean, they're thinking,
I know.
Isaiah, you know.
I mean, maybe he'll be a difference maker on special teams, because that's predominantly what he's been.
The point
in
is that
the
was,
NFL.
That was mean to people, James.
Yeah, it was very rude, and I apologize.
Hey, look, maybe he makes the roster. Back end guy, has some playing experience, been around the league a little bit.
Yeah, he's played 4 years with the Washington Commanders. He was a former 5th round pick in 2020. He's a former Michigan Wolverine. But for the most part, he's only been a special teamer. He's made a couple of tackles, a couple of plays here and there on defense. But for the most part, he has been a special teamer, like I had mentioned.
Yeah, so that's, again, not a huge move, but we'll see where it goes. Getting back to the Pels a little bit, like last night's game, what I was more disappointed in is the lack of intensity. I thought, look, Antonio Daniels is one of the best in the business on the TV broadcast, and he talked about it at different points. Now, look, the officiating, you can argue, like, Orlando was physical and seemingly got away with it, and the Pels didn't. Now, the free throw disparity, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about defending guys that are big and physical and getting called for holds and different little kind of hand check fouls throughout the game. And Zion, who I thought had, you know, one of those games where it wasn't quite in rhythm the whole way, but was still doing enough to kind of keep you in the game, he ends up going to the free throw line like twice the whole game. And so I did struggle with that. And clearly, the Pels were not fans of the officiating either. And there was the play where Zion got his knees taken out, and that was scary. And look, he went back to the locker room, and Jen Hale on the broadcast really scared everybody, because she said, I have bad news. Zion went back to the locker room with the doctors, and everybody's like, what? And then the next shot is him walking back into the game. And they went, okay, I guess he's fine. So that was a kind of a sigh of relief, although you never know. You hope the next couple days they don't go back, do more testing, and find anything wrong with him. But the play was scary, like, and he got his knees taken out. And I understand the defensive player. It looks like he kind of slipped, so it wasn't his intent to take him out like a linebacker taking out a receiver. But That's how it looked. And for them not to go back and call extra, like, look, the NBA, with a lot of their flagrant stuff, they don't care about intent. Like, if you elbow a guy in the eye, you get called for something, whether you meant to or not. And that was tough for them not to get the flagrant call. And then you end up having three players get ejected at the very end. I thought it was ridiculous. The official, like, okay, if you want to toss the first guy because they said something, you know, snarky to you on the way off the floor, go ahead. But then to go down the line and start ejecting players one by one, like this is some sort of wrestling show and you're the main event, like, I just thought that was ridiculous. Again, it doesn't matter all that much. The game was over. They're not going to get suspended for it. They'll get fined, which is, you know, annoying for them, I'm sure, but I just didn't understand the idea of the officials kind of seemingly making it about themselves at the end of the game.
Yeah, I find that very confusing because the ejections came with 7.6 seconds to go when the Magic were up by 11 at that point.
If you toss Herb because they went over and they're saying stuff to you at the end of the game, whatever, you make your point, you toss a guy. But then when his teammate comes to kind of back him up and now you toss him, it was like and Antonio Daniels had some choice words for what the officials were doing there, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. But either way, it's a tough loss. It's not a great loss. Orlando does not match up well with the Pels. Well, the Pels, I should say, don't match up with Orlando. It seems like Paolo Banchero, who is, look, a great player that's coming into his own as a star in this league, but he sure seems to enjoy playing against New Orleans. He had that game winner against them before. He went off for 32 again last night. So that's all tough. The good news out of all this, you have two winnable games in your next three, San Antonio and Portland. Now, again, the Spurs are playing much better right now, and Victor has gotten way more comfortable, and he is going to be obviously tough to deal with in years to come.
He looks like an absolute beast.
Right, and they've been playing well, but you do have two games you should win, and then that middle game, look, when you play Phoenix, that's going to be another heavyweight fight. Ideally, Devin Booker's not going to score 57 points next time, so that would be ideal, and maybe you can win the game.
You would hope for that.
That would be optimal.
Yeah, that would be optimal. Maybe keep him to 49. Maybe that'll help. Also, with the Orlando Magic, they've won their last five games against the Pels and the last seven games in New Orleans.
One of those teams, right? Just matchup-wise, yeah, like, it just feels like it's not a great one for them, which, again, it's not that big a deal because they're in the Eastern Conference, so if you play them in the playoffs, that'll be the NBA Finals, and I think we'll be happy to be there.
For me, and look, I'm going to get to see them up close and personal for the first time this year. I'm going tomorrow night to New Orleans to the Smoothie King Center for the Spurs-Pels game. They look like a totally different team without B.I., and I know during that stretch they beat Milwaukee, but have you seen the Bucks play in the last 2.5 weeks? They've been dreadful.
Yeah, they're 5-5 and they're on a 2-game losing streak.
They have played awful. Hey, Doc Rivers, he's the answer.
Yeah.
Woof on that. That was a mistake from jump. So the one win that you kind of thought was really good is a team that's kind of fading themselves and is immensely flawed. Even if... Let's do best case scenario here. Let's say they somehow stumble and find a way to avoid the play-in tournament, even though it doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that. They're trending the other way. But let's say they figure it out, right? And CJ McCollum returns to form and Zion takes over and the officials don't get in the way. Let's say all those things happen and they figure out a way to avoid being the 7 seed, right? They get a top 6 seed. Top 4 is not going to happen now. And then we've been told that Brandon Ingram will return, they hope, for the postseason. Like, they don't expect him to play during the regular season. We have no idea what version of B.I. you're going to get, because he's coming off an injury.
Yeah, you're in kind of a Philly situation now.
Exactly. That's not the situation you want to be in.
No, it's not. And, you know, the good thing I would say, too, let's remember about the play-in structure. And this is something I talked a little bit about in the middle of the season when things were a little bit more sketchy. Obviously, now they're back to kind of that point. Being the 7th seed is not the worst thing in the world, because you have two chances to win one game. And as we mentioned, in my opinion, I don't think it's the only team I would really want to avoid in the first round is Denver. I wouldn't be terrified to play Minnesota or OKC, even though you don't really seem to match up great with the Thunder. That's a team that you actually have just as much playoff experience as, which is surprising given, you know, that the Pels haven't been there all that much. So you have two shots to win one game to get in as either the 7 or 8 if you finish the regular season 7th. So that's not worst case for me. I think worst case is you somehow stumble to 8, which with the way the Lakers are playing, and again, a head-to-head game ahead is not impossible. So I think that's a bigger focus. But yeah, getting to 6 would be massive. You feel like, again, that top 3 is still unsettled. You could end up being 6th and still play Denver in the first round because they're tied up with everybody up there. So that'll be interesting. But all in all, they've got to start playing better. And again, I was in, you know, New Orleans last year for a couple of those games down the stretch covering them. And these messages from Willie Green talking about we need to be focused day in and day out, and CJ McCollum echoing those same things. And I remember talking to some media members and then coming back on the show and saying, what do you mean focus is an issue? Like, we're on the stretch run here. Like, and they had a shot at that point to move themselves up the standings, and it wasn't happening. And so this year, that hasn't been a thing all year, but now we're kind of back to that point. Now, again, B.I. being out is massive, and they did a good job. Alvarado missing right now is important, too.
Yeah.
A day like yesterday, and I thought Joel Myers brought up, it was a great point. In a game like that where you just feel a little sluggish, a little out of sorts, he's been great at coming in and kind of providing you what you need off the bench to really get you back in a rhythm. And not having him hurts as well, so hopefully you get him soon. But they need some help right now. And I don't understand the Jonas Valanciunas minutes distribution thing. I'm never going to.
Willie Green hates him. It's a thing, right? Like, Willie doesn't want to use him. That's what it boils down to. Like, Willie's vision on how he wants this team to operate does not include Valanciunas.
Which makes it just, why is he still there then?
Then why is he still
there? I like him. I think it's good that they have him. But yeah, in some of these matchups, I understand what you're giving up defensively, but...
And I get it. I get it. You don't want him out there because you feel like he's a liability. Willie feels like he's a liability defensively. Okay. But you still need a guy out there that can get rebounds and score buckets, and that's what he can do down low. I don't understand how they just say, go rot on the end of the bench. And that's what they do with him. He will not be here on this roster next year. I can guarantee you that. The good news is
he'll play on Friday, I would imagine, because he's really the only physical presence you have to throw out there on Wemby. Yeah, I mean, he's really the only physical option you have. Like, again, if this roster still had Jackson Hayes for all his faults... Like, I actually understood sometimes when they would give Valanciunas minutes to Hayes, where it was like, okay, we're going to try and we still have the height and size in there, but now we have this more athletic player who can block some shots a little bit more effectively and has more offensive, well, not more offensive of skill than Valanciunas certainly, but has a different style of game. But now, yeah, like, obviously the Cody Zeller thing, which has been what we thought it was, he doesn't play much, and when he's not healthy, it's not a factor anyway. I think Valanciunas needs to be playing more than he is, but... All in all, I don't know. We'll see if they can turn things around, and we'll have some great opportunities for you to see them in person, and you can report back. I'm interested to hear what the post-game stuff's going to sound like if they continue to struggle, or if they get back on the winning track tomorrow. And let's see if they feel like a team that's got momentum heading into the stretch run. This is it.
Hey, look.
You could be the spark. You could be the catalyst.
You're welcome, Pills Nation.
It hasn't happened yet, but you could be.
Hashtag won't bow down. Hashtag flock up. I don't know. What was there?
What are we doing this year?
What are they doing this year?
I lose track.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We're not going to bow down, and we are going to flock up. That's what I know.
We got to take a timeout. Who are we going to talk to, Dawson?
We're going to talk to Jack Cavavit about the Final Four and little McNeese softball mixed in as well. This is RP3 D'Lo and Mesh.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
And we welcome you back in to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh here as we are broadcasting from the EVCO Development Studios on a Thursday edition of the program. The Final Four is set. We've been talking to our buddy Jack Cavavit a couple times here and there going into the tournament and then during it. And now we have a chance to preview the last four games, but also one other sporting event to talk about. So first of all, Jack, a broadcaster for the ACC Network, thank you for making the time for us again.
Dawson, guys, appreciate y'all having me as always.
So, Jack, before we talk basketball, just because of the way your schedule works, I know you were working with the ACC Network a little bit, and you got to see the McNeese Cowgirls over there to play Florida State in softball a couple of times, and it did not go well for McNeese. Just, you know, big picture summary-wise, you know, this is a McNeese team that's been pretty good. RPI is still in the top 50. Why did they struggle so much against the Noles?
Well, Well, yeah, it was a pleasure to watch them, too. I mean, you're just running into one of the best offenses in the country. That's Florida State in softball, and they showed it off both nights in two-run rule fashions. But a lot of cool stories there, too. Issa Torres, a freshman for Florida State. Her older sister, Mariana Torres, is a part of McNeese as well. So that was kind of cool to see both of them out there playing against each other. But, I mean, yeah, of course. I think in the Southland, you would think that they're going to be able to compete, and that's why the reason they're at the top right now. You're running into a powerhouse in Florida State. They were there in the national championship a season ago. So, you know, it's tough to take down those top opponents. But, again, they've had their fair share of run-ins. You know, it's a tough bouts versus LSU early on in the season. But they've competed versus these top 25 opponents this year, and I think they'll be just fine going down the road.
All right, so from that, let's get into the Final Four. We had you on before the tournament, and we talked about UConn. And, you know, we know your connection there and how much you watch this team, and you talked about how they're even better potentially than they were a year ago. If people didn't believe you, I think they've seen it now throughout the tournament. It hasn't been close, and they are a unit right now. What about Dan Hurley's team has allowed them? Again, it's funny, too. We cover LSU baseball, and they're dealing with the kind of the after effects of winning a title and losing all the talent, and they're struggling right now. And we know how difficult that is in sports. This UConn team won the tournament last year, and yet they feel hungrier. How has that been?
Well, you know what's funny, Dawson, is they keep trying to add fuel to the fire. I'm not sure you saw last night UConn dealing with some travel issues getting into Arizona. They were originally supposed to leave yesterday around 6 p.m., and they didn't get in until super late in the morning today. So you're dealing with certain travel issues. Just more fire for Dan Hurley, who seems to always find something to get the guys going. But you know, I think it raises the question of, depending the outcome on Saturday, and obviously, of course, for the rest of the tournament, of where this team could potentially stack up in the last 25 years of top teams. I mean, I look at, I think, the 2011-2012 Kentucky team led by Anthony Davis, how good they were defensively. And then even the last team to go back-to-back was with the Florida Gators, 06-07, with Al Horford and Corey Brewer and Joakim Noah. You're looking at teams that have top lottery picks or NBA guys, and that's exactly what this UConn team has. You have Steph Castle, a phenomenal five-star freshman who's certainly going to be a lottery pick, as well as we've all seen the impact now of Donovan Klingon, the big man down low. I mean, I'm not sure if there's anyone in the country that has an impact that he does. Obviously, Zach Edey has certainly collected a bunch of accolades and has gotten that recognition, but you saw it in the Illinois game where they couldn't score with Klingon on the floor, and it's not even necessarily what he's doing to block shots and score. It's how he adjusts shots, and when guys try to get into the lane, they just freeze up. You don't even know what to do. He just alters so many different shots and makes teams play a different style. But Dan Hurley, of course, he's got the guys firing. It's what I've been saying. I mean, this offense is so methodical. It's so unselfish, and it's really a pleasure to watch. And you go into these games and you think, how can they win by double digits again facing an Illinois team that is one of the best offenses in the country and just took down the Iowa State Cyclones? And sure enough, what do? A 30-0 run. I mean, I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
It was incredible. And now their opponent is an interesting one. Alabama comes into this game, and I was going back on some of the numbers here because we know about Alabama's offense. They got held to 72 by Grand Canyon, a game they still won by double figures. Before that, they hadn't scored less than 80 points since January the 24th against Auburn. So we know they can score it, but they haven't had to score it against this UConn team defensively. What do you think of the matchup, and what kind of challenges does Alabama present UConn?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because UConn really hasn't played this sort of style of team yet this year. And all credit to Nate Oates, and he really takes that more analytical approach to the game, where you're only going to see this team shoot either threes or they're going to score in the paint. It's either a three or highly efficient shot next to the basket. You're never going to see this team very, very rarely pull up from the mid-range. And that's why they're so effective. They love to run. And most importantly, why they win these games and why they've been so successful in the tournament right now, because they make teams play their style. And I think that's one part of this matchup where UConn could struggle. I think there's two things. I think one, in terms of this style, if Alabama is going to get the tempo up and running and they're making UConn run with them, that's not where you want to play into. And also, as I mentioned, with Donovan Klingon, and we haven't seen him really get into foul trouble yet. in this game. I've mentioned how much of an impact he is when he's on the floor. If Alabama can get out and run and play their style of flow and tempo, but most importantly, get Donovan Klingon into foul trouble, this is a team they showed last game versus Clemson. They can shoot with the best of them. They know how to shoot the three ball. Mark Sears, I mean, he is playing lights out right now, and I've always mentioned veteran guard play and having a guy that can lock down for you in the backcourt, and Sears has been great. So I don't know if this is going to be as blowout fashion as UConn has seen. But again, this line was set at 11.5, so it clearly shows the respect you got to give to the defending national champs. But I think Alabama certainly poses a good threat.
We're talking with Jack Kavovit. He's a broadcaster for the ACC Network. Jack, looking at the other matchup between Purdue and NC State, the big one is inside the paint between Zach Edey and DJ Burns. You've been able to see Burns quite a bit since they are part of the ACC, but who do you think has the big advantage in this matchup? I know that Zach Edey's bigger by taller sense, but seems like DJ Burns, he's got a little bit of an offensive game that can make this a lot closer than maybe we anticipate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you're seeing some of the moves last game. I mean, DJ Burns is pulling some tricks out of his bag that I didn't even think he had. And you mentioned it, too. I got to see NC State came into Tallahassee late into the season. They play late into February. And in that game, Florida State won. And also, DJ Burns took two shots. He had 0 points. And it's crazy just to see the run that they've been on now, and it just shows how special Marsh is and the confidence that this team is playing with. I think that's the biggest thing right now is, you know, you see flashes of it during the season, but Burns and DJ Horn, I mean, they're playing on another level right now. And I want to say I've always been a big fan of Purdue all year, and going back to the impact I talked about with Donovan Klingon, Zach Edey certainly presents that same exact thing. I mean, he's been phenomenal. There's a reason he dropped 40 points last game. And if I had to pick the two, I would definitely lean towards Zach Edey. I think what he's been able to do is phenomenal down low, drawing fouls, just making teams have to play into his game, and it's worked so well for Purdue. But it goes back to this, is the confidence that NC State is playing with right now. Again, as I saw flashes this season, right, but DJ Burns is on another level right now, and it just feels like NC State has to be the team of destiny, right? And so if I'm going to have to choose, I got to go with the guys from the ACC. I think DJ Burns is a type of player and style that maybe Zach Edey hasn't seen this year, and I think he's going to present a little bit more challenge to Edey, who's kind of really been having his way in this tournament.
If that's the case, do you think NC State is going to pull the upset, or are you going with the Boilermakers?
And so here's where it gets interesting. It's right. I would love to see both one seeds in the tournament. Let's get Edey. Let's get Klingon. What a matchup that would be down low and stars all over the floor. But it just feels like NC State, they've been doubted all through this run right now. You win 5 games in 5 days to clinch the ACC tournament, and now you go on this run. I thought Marquette would have been the team to take them down, and they beat Marquette. And then you see Duke again. Saw them multiple times this season. They easily took care of business. I'm not going to discredit the Wolfpack right now. Again, I got to ride the confidence. I want to ride the hot hand. I think it's going to be a really good game. I'm going to go with NC State.
Jack's going with NC State. Of all the 11 seeds that have made the Final Four, and we've had more than half a dozen do so, not a single one has ever won their Final Four game. So I like that pick. It's a tad bold of you to go that direction. So you
gotta
like
go bold, baby.
Got to go bold. So you like NC State versus UConn. I guess that leads me to my next question. Who's going to win the national championship game on Monday?
And listen, I think you probably already know the answer to that. I got to go back-to-back with the UConn Huskies. And it's something I think I've mentioned before, is the last time that we've seen a team do what NC State's doing was the UConn Huskies. So how perfect would that be to get that matchup into the final game? But I'll say this, I think regardless, all of these teams and how they match up, it's so special to what March is. I mean, you got two tournament conference champions in NC State and UConn, and then you get a team like Alabama who's knocked out of the first round of the SEC tournament. They lost a couple games down the stretch in the regular season as well, and with Purdue, they lost in their conference tournament as well, yet you never know what's going to happen in March, and now we're here, and it just shows you how special some of these runs are that these teams go on. But I think I'm hoping to see UConn, NC State in the championship Monday, and I got the UConn Huskies going back to back.
We only got about a minute here, Jack, but Just give me your overall thoughts on the Final Four for the women, and who do you think is going to meet in the title game and who's going to win it?
Again, how special is it, too? You got the Wolfpack and the Huskies on either side representing. I got to tell you, what a phenomenal job Gino has done with the ladies this season, all the injuries that they have faced. That's going to be such a good matchup with Iowa and with UConn. But on the other side, too, I mean, South Carolina, they've been such a powerhouse this year. I mean, I can't see any other team but them coming out on top. But I got to say this, and this is my prediction for the women. I think whoever comes out of Iowa and UConn is going to be the team cutting down the nets at the end of the year.
Jack, appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much. Keep up the tremendous work that you're doing for the ACC Network, and we'll talk to you soon, bud.
Guys, I appreciate the time as always, and I'm looking forward, I'm sure as y'all are, to watch these games this weekend.
We got to take a timeout. We'll get an update on the poll question of the day. That's all coming up next right here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
Looking at the poll question of the day, we had asked you on Facebook and on X, will the Pelicans avoid the play-in tournament? 70% of you have said no, but there is that 30% that is still optimistic. Hart chimed in on X.
He had said, our guy Hart.
Oh, absolutely. He had said, last five games have been brutal. By far the toughest stretch all season. I think they can handle the last six and get the sixth seed, especially if they can get key players back like B.I. and Jose Alvarado. Still not a fan of Willie sitting guys like Jordan Hawkins, Matt Ryan, and even JV when they hit walls in the offense, though.
Yeah, I agree. I actually, I fully agree. I do think the idea of having, and look, Trey Murphy's a great shot creator, but as it was documented last night, like Orlando was all over him. I mean, they swarmed him, and they did it. They had a plan, and they were able to get him off his step. And I just think having another floor spacer out there wouldn't be a bad idea. Now, clearly, look, they've won a lot of games using Willie Green's approach, so it's not like the guy doesn't know anything, but I just struggle sometimes when you get in one of those lulls and it feels like, you know, Zion's having a tough time getting to the basket and Murphy's not able to get any open looks and you don't have B.I. out there, which would usually be that third, you know, that mid-level guy who kind of changes what you're capable of offensively. I would like to have a couple more floor spacers out there, but that just isn't the lineups that he's been choosing to use at this point.
And I get having confidence, but you look at their schedule, there's only two games that you go, those should be wins.
Yeah, the good
everything
thing, though,
everything else is coin flips. So
it's playoff teams, but the good news is you're playing teams that are more in your area of the playoff bracket. The last week or two, you have played, again, the best team in the league in Boston, a team in Milwaukee that was up there at the top. So it is better, I think. Even Orlando's the fourth place team in the East as opposed to some of these. They're more winnable, although, yeah, you're not going to just walk in and win any of those games.
And those teams are going to be fighting for playoff positioning, in particular in the play-in tournament, because they got Spurs tomorrow night against Wimby. Then it's at Phoenix, at Portland. Portland should be a win. At Sactown, at Golden State, and then they have to come back home to finish up things against the Lakers.
I think the other silver lining about that schedule, though, if you're able to at least, you know, put together enough wins, and by the way, we mentioned it, Phoenix's schedule is just as difficult, if not more so.
It's more difficult.
So you're going to get in that environment of feeling like you're playing in playoff atmospheres, I'd imagine, with especially some of those crowds on the West Coast. And that, I think, is a good thing. Get you kind of in that playoff mentality as opposed to, you know, if your last few games of the year were Detroit and San Antonio and Charlotte, yeah, maybe you're going to pick up wins, but then you're going to have to ramp it up. They'll be in playoff mode when the playoffs start. So I think that's maybe a good thing. Hour number one has come to a close. Hour number two coming up. We will have Les East at the 12:30 mark. But until then, stay with us.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo and Mesh.
Oh, me, oh my. Crawfish pie. Hour number two has arrived here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. Hour one was good. We did our today's specials, covered a lot of topics, spent some time with the Pellies. They suffered a setback last night. We previewed the Final Four as well. Coming up this hour, half an hour from right now, our guy Les East from CrescentCitySports.com will join us to talk Pels, to also talk the New Orleans Saints.
We'll take your phone calls as well. That is available to you if you're interested. Mike's Marine Hotline is open, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. I'm the big, bald, bearded, and beautiful one, Raymond Parch III. Joined once again inside the EFCO Development Studios by the son of Iceman, 2 degrees himself, Dawson Iserlo, and James Mesh, who has the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi. I have deemed it so, thus it is. I just make bold proclamations. I share it on Twitter, kind of like our governor does. So there you go.
You know, I was going to ask. There was a joke to be made there. I stayed away from it. And you went for it.
Oh, I went for it because it deserves to be joked about. Just come on. Like, what are we doing here? Like, seriously. But if you do want to chop it up with us, just give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. And let's go out to the hotline because Ralph is patiently waiting. Ralph, good day to you, brother. What's on your mind, my friend?
They just called me Mr. Patience. You know, that's what I do. I just wait patiently.
There it is. There it is.
I mean, if every doctor's office, I'm that patient guy just waiting for my appointment 45 minutes later, you know.
Oh, nothing, but, nothing like it.
Hey, I just want to get you guys' take on the Louisiana legislature banning individual prop bets on college athletes. You know, I just think it's kind of ridiculous, kind of when, you know, you got people from Texas coming over to Louisiana to actually play sports bets and to label this for the safety and integrity of the athletes. You know, look, Kayshawn Booty, you know, is it this Kayshawn Booty bill that they're, you know, banning? I just think it's ridiculous and just kind of want to see how y'all felt about it.
So I appreciate the question, Ralph. I'll start by saying this. I've said it before, I don't get involved in sports betting, even though I think there was a time in my life where it would have taken up all my time. When I was in college, I'd have been like, this is awesome. It wasn't legal at the time, so I didn't do it then either. But I do think the reason they're doing that is because we've had some pretty ugly stories shared. And I think the young man who plays for Purdue was one of this where, and I don't know if you've even seen this one, but essentially a guy who doesn't play a whole lot was at the end of the bench, and they put him in at the end of the Grambling game, and he hit a three, maybe the last three he's ever going to hit in a competitive basketball game, and all his teammates went crazy, and he said it was a great moment. And he got to the locker room, and he turned his phone on, and he had nothing but death threats and ill wishes on his social media accounts because of people who had the line at minus 28 or whatever it was, and that shot, you know, made the other team cover. Now, that's actually not even related to an individual prop bet, so this isn't fixing that. But I do think that type of stuff is what they're worried about, and they're also worried about what happened in the NBA with Jontay Porter, who is under investigation. I don't think we have any final answers, but they're worried that he basically was throwing games, or at least throwing his own lines, if he had the under on points in these games that he sat out of after he entered the game for a minute. So I think that's the fear. But yeah, look, when they legalized all of this stuff and made it kind of more in the mainstream, and that's the other thing too, it's not like, let's not be naive and act like this wasn't happening before and people just were getting away with it. I imagine it did a lot. I'm sure there's been plenty of this stuff that's gone unnoticed for decades. But I think the idea there is to try and avoid some of this harassment that these individuals, especially at the college level, are receiving. So I understand why it was passed.
I also think it may be little too late. Like, no one knew how to deal with what was coming. And when the state signed off on legalized sports betting, and then it was all about getting the apps and having the bookies, the bookmakers, and all that stuff, and everyone jumped in and rushed into it, not thinking about having things in place for safeguards, right?
Kind of like NIL.
It's exactly like NIL. It was like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. And the research wasn't done properly. People didn't take the time out needed to actually examine all the different possible scenarios. So this is a way of trying to correct that. Will it? I don't know. To Dawson's point, people have been betting on sports events for 100 years. and they've been betting on college for most of that time as well. We just didn't know about it. And the other thing is now the problems to a larger problem with your NFL, with your NBA, with Major League Baseball, and whoever else, because we've had betting issues and possible betting scandals in all three of the North American major sports, professional sports, right? Just in the last year, or just maybe just in the last 5 months. All of them are associated with sports betting. All of them have sponsors that are casinos or sports betting parlors or sports betting apps. So it's everywhere now, right? Like, it's not foreign to anyone, so you're bombarded by it. People that are watching any of the games see it. If you're a player and you're playing in these professional leagues, you're seeing it everywhere in the arena that you're in or on television, or sometimes it will probably get to the point where it's on your jersey. So how do you gonna, like, the cat's out of the bag now. You understand what I'm saying? And I know we're going to go through this, what I call a dog and pony show. Well, this guy placed this bet, and this is, that's how it's going to be, and this is against the rules. And they're going to put together frameworks, and they're going to do rules, and they're going to say all these things, and these commissioners are going to say things, and college presidents are going to say things, and state lawmakers and governors are all going to say things, and it's going to be a whole waste of time because it's done. Like, everyone signed off on sports betting. All the professional sports teams have embraced it. All the professional sports leagues have embraced gambling and sports betting. We have teams in Vegas have relocated to Las Vegas, the hub of betting in our country. It's a wrap. Like it's like the NCAA coming back and saying, "Hey, you had a recruiting violation, so we're going to vacate wins from a season 3 years ago and take away a Final Four run." Everyone still played on that team. Everyone still made that Final Four run, and everyone still remembers it. It becomes irrelevant, and that's how I feel like it's going to be with this.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of a situation where you're waiting to put water in the boat, and everybody's trying to figure out if we're going to put the boat in, and then you put the boat in the water, and all of a sudden water's coming everywhere, and now you're trying to slap flex tape all over it, and it's
flex
leaking,
seal.
And it's leaking from 10 different places, and
there
it's
it
like,
is.
Well, we really wanted to be on the water, so we kind of got that part going, but we also have all these issues, and we can't really fix them all at once. So You can't.
And speaking of taking on water, you could argue that's what the Pelicans are doing right now. And they haven't been playing very well. We'll head back out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. Oh, our guy Paul is waiting patiently. Paul, good day to you, bud. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, I don't know what kind of day this is. It's a glorious day because we swept the little Astros, and we only lost one game. But, I mean, the devastating news of the great Randall, Jordan Randall.
Julius Randall, is over. Yes.
It's Julius. So, it's Julius Randall there. They're diehard Jordan Knicks Randall fan, Paul.
Jordan Randall. our season is over. We're going to the chip, but it's over now. It's over. It's over. You know, so it's a bad, devastating day.
Brother, I got nothing but love for you, but if you thought Julius Randall was the missing piece for a championship run, you and I are going to have to go get your head examined because that cat is not that guy.
What we have, he is now.
He never was. He never will be.
Dwight Howard or somebody. There's nobody else out there.
Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard. I love that reference, by the way.
But you see, this is what I called about. Y'all got to stop this. Giving fake hope. Fake hope about them Pelicans. Making excuses for them. They just not good. They just ain't got it.
There it is.
That's all it is about them. You know, think about it. Every time y'all talk about them, it's always an excuse. It's always something. It's always something. It's always something. Just scratch the team and start over.
Paul, they got a better record than the Knicks right now.
Huh?
They got a better record than you Knicks.
We have excuses.
Wait a minute.
Wait, hold on. We can't play this game.
We got the main man down. That's
we got the main man down. Brandon Ingram.
We got a black cat running my Ron Madison Square Garden. That is what it is.
Randall is not the main guy there on your team, by the way.
All right. Look at the injuries. OG, look at all this now. With that man, that we was going to the chip and we were going to beat them leprechauns. We was going to beat them.
You weren't going to beat them to begin with.
I love
now, it. It's over.
It's over. But it's over now.
Well, it never
it's
started, over. So that's the real
thing. Oh, there it is.
You see, instead of y'all worrying about, I think the world needs to start worrying about gambling and the betting in the pros. They need to worry about what happened to the Knicks. That's what they need to worry about.
That's what they,
instead of worrying about the Pelicans, I'm being honest, man. Think about it. Every time y'all talk about the Pelicans, man, it's always something. It's
who
always
has something. A better it's, chance?
They're doing it to themselves.
But, Paul, who has a better chance of making a run in the playoffs this year? Is it your Knickerbockers or is it the Pelicans?
Well, before the injuries, it was us. We was going to the chip.
Man, I mean, Julius Randle been out for a while, Cat. Julius has been.
Because you got Denver on the other end. You got Sacramento. You still got some tough squads over there
I love
on
it.
That end.
I love
and
it.
And they just don't want. You know what I mean? Just think about it. They really don't want. And what they missing a true point guard. They're really missing a true point guard. But when you think about it, they like the Clippers. They just don't want.
Just don't you know? Want. Well, we love to hear from you. We always want to hear from you, Paul. Thank you for your
thank
time,
we
bud.
Got the Yankees, though. That's going to keep us going. Go Yankees.
There you go, buddy. Paul. And look, his Yankees are off to a hot start in spite of Aaron Boone being their manager. They found a way. And they're still paying Stanton all that money to ground out, which is amazing.
Still got 150 some games to go.
Yeah, they do. They got a little extra inning win yesterday too. It was a Arizona, by the way.
It was a scary one.
How about the only undefeated team in Major League Baseball, the Detroit Tigers? Everybody had that on their bingo cards. Now they haven't played all that many games because weather in New York in April. They've had a series with the Mets that has not gotten off the ground really.
4-0.
4-0. Yeah, 4-0. Can't ever take that away from them. So. There you go.
There we go. There we go. James Mesh, could you give us an update on the poll question of the day, please?
Yeah, I could do that for you. Speaking of those Pelicans, do you think that they're going to be able to avoid the play-in tournament? 70% of you have said no. Looking at the other comment that we got, Tana said, I have faith that they will avoid, but for that to happen, they'll have to catch some other teams at the right time. However, after that last several years of bad luck, I think that they'll finally go in a positive way. Still got that positive in them.
We're going to close out the first segment here of hour number two of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. We have a special guest. You know her from time to time. She has made appearances on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. Her name is Hattie Elise Parch. How are you?
Good.
Oh, now you're going to be all meek? What are you doing? Hey, I have a question for you. You ready for it?
Yeah.
I say that James Mesh has the best head of hair of anyone in... She's starting to laugh. She can't. She won't even let me finish the question, James. I say... Daddy says that James Mesh has the best head of hair of anyone in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi. You've known Mr. James for a few years now. Do you agree with when Daddy says that about Mr. James?
Yeah, because you don't have any hair.
It's a fair point. Dawson has hair. Look at him. He has nice hair.
We're working on keeping it. That's the goal for the rest of my life.
Hattie's allowed back on the show.
Hattie's allowed back on the show because she agrees that you have the best head of hair at Sports Talk Radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi.
Is it better than Matt Miguez?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There it is. All right. Yeah, she's definitely allowed back on.
Don't tell him I said that.
So I'll make sure to tell him.
We're making sure to tell him now.
No, you ain't. No.
No, you ain't. Thank you for coming on, baby girl.
You're welcome.
We got to take a time out. More sports talk and possibly more Matt Miguez slander coming your way. That was courtesy of a 9-year-old, by the way. He just got bodied. Our guy Matt Miguez just got bodied by my 9-year-old daughter. We got to take a time out. You're listening to ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we're broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. Don't forget to vote on our poll question of the day where we talked about the New Orleans Pelicans. Do you think that they're going to be able to avoid the play-in tournament? We'll just have to see. Only got a few more games to go, 6 to be exact, but we had another game that played last night, boys. The Houston Astros, they finally got another win, now going to 2-5 on the season.
Yeah, it didn't take them as long to get the second win as it did to get the first, and they obviously should have had all three, but they win the series against Toronto. Again, the pitching was good last night. Javier struggled through five innings, but didn't give up a run. So it's one of those where you'll take the results despite getting there, not being the prettiest. He had about 100 pitches in five innings, but bullpen was clean and the offense raked again. Alvarez, who we've been waiting on a little bit, how about 4 for 5 with 2 homers, a double, and his out going 406 feet to the warning track. So he is, it seems, locked back in. Kevin's complaining about runs. When your bullpen blows a lead in four of your first five games of the year, I don't care how many. I wish they'd have scored 117 runs in one game. I wish they'd have scored. I wish they'd have never stopped scoring. But he, of course, is going to complain that the offense is hitting home runs because of some weird mythical creature he's created in his own head. And he'd apparently rather lose games because you know what happens when you don't score enough runs? You lose. But anyway. I digress.
They take the series from Toronto, taking 2 of 3 from a team a lot of folks think is going to be possibly a playoff team. I know Javier didn't have the control that you'd like, right? He did have the 5 walks in 5 innings, and he did throw nearly 100 pitches. He threw 97 last night. But he only gave up the 1 hit. So it was a good start, not a great start by him. But the thing that stood out to me was not that. It was that they went with 4 different guys to come out of the pen, and not a single one of them gave up a hit. Like not one. 4 innings of no-hit baseball. I'll take that all day long if I'm an Astros fan. 4 strikeouts and only 2 walks in those last 4 innings. So the bullpen, that's what I like to call a get-right game. Now, they need a few more of those for their guys on the back end because they've had a just terrible, dreadful start to the season. And now they're 2-5, and now guess what? They get to do a funny thing. Now they get to go to Arlington, and they get to go on the road where they've been better the last couple years. And they get to take on their in-state rival. What do they call it? The Silver Boot? Is there a particular name for it, right? They play for like a silver cowboy boot or something? I don't know. They play for something. And they get to take on the Rangers, the defending World Series champs who beat them in the ALCS last year. So that'll be salty for sure. And look, it's early. You're looking up. You're figuring out what it's called.
No, it is.
The Silver Cowboy Boot Trophy.
I've got a little replica of it. I got it one time at a giveaway at Minute Maid Park.
Oh, shout out to you. We got magnets when we were there on Thursday.
We did.
For the game. Schedule magnet. That's a big flex. That's something that's hot on those streets.
Absolutely.
People want it. People need it. No?
Yeah. See if James could get them in the memorabilia circles. See what we can get for them. Maybe auction a couple of them off.
Ask your people on the streets that are pushing all that memorabilia weight.
Yeah. He's known for those. He's known for his memorabilia.
he's answering the Mike's Marine hotline. If you do want to call and chop it up with us, you know we'd love to hear from you. The number is 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keep you on the water. Don't be afraid. Be like Ralph. Be like Paul. Call the hotline. Talk with us. We'd love to hear from you. By the way, you did mention the Detroit Tigers being the only undefeated team in Major League Baseball. They have a doubleheader today against the Mets, who are winless, and it's in danger. Game one, they're heading to the bottom of the fifth, and the Mets are leading 2-0. So let's hope the Tigers put on their rally caps and hand the Mets another loss, because nothing would make me happier than to see that.
There you go.
Let's
head back out to the Mike's Marine Hotline. We'll welcome T onto the show. He's got a couple different thoughts, I imagine. T, what's going on?
Hey, how y'all doing, guys? Long time no talk.
For sure.
Yep. Well, first of all, I'm going to agree with RP's daughter. I think he has the best hair, James.
There's...
out of everybody. But could
you can call anytime.
Could you might have dunk? Or at least touch the rim or so.
Yeah, that's the problem there.
There he is. There
you're right.
Is.
You're right about that.
Is the beautiful head of lettuce on top of Mesh's head, did that weigh him down too much to be able to elevate, to be able to touch the rim? What do you think?
Yes. Should cut it all off.
There it is.
There you go.
Might help.
Just go military.
No. Oh, seriously, though. I just wanted to get y'all opinion on LSU, but speaking of baseball, I don't mean to change to college, but do you think LSU's in trouble? And do you think that this series with Vanderbilt is the tail of the tape, well, so to speak, you know?
I'll jump in first. We appreciate the phone call, brother. LSU baseball, look, we had the Mad Dog Ron Higgins, who covers them for the Shreveport Bossier Journal, on yesterday. LSU baseball hasn't lost their first four series in SEC play since 1969. And if they lose to, once again, Vandy is a top 10 ranked opponent. Next week, they have to go on the road and go to Knoxville against a top 10 ranked Tennessee team. Alabama's pretty good this year. Auburn has shown promise. It doesn't get any easier for the defending national champs. Jay Johnson's trying to do everything that he can, right? He took away cell phones, or you can't have them at the park, or whatever it might be. He's trying to do something to get his team fired up, to get his team focused. Vandy is a good team. They lean on their pitching. They're not a good offensive ball club. They don't score a lot of runs. But if you open up SEC play, dropping your first four series, and then you have to go on the road at Tennessee, it feels like you're trending to being more like what happened to Mississippi State 2 years ago, Ole Miss last year, defending national champs in the SEC that are on the struggle bus the next year. I'm not quite there yet, but if you drop a series to Vandy, and then let's say you go on the road and you drop a series to Tennessee, you may not be able to qualify for the SEC tournament in Hoover because there's only so many series left.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I think that's going a little far for now. They're in a better spot than those two teams were at this point in their years because, again, I mean, some of the struggles for those two teams were incredible after their title runs.
Oh, but they were just dreadful. Yes, LSU, to be fair, LSU is not where Mississippi State was at 2 years ago or Ole Miss last year. That's right. To be fair, but they sure don't look like a top 25 team right now. They sure don't look like a team that's going to be hosting a regional, and they look like a team that's going to have to fight and claw just to get into an NCAA regional. Latest projections from Baseball America has them as a 3 seed in the Oklahoma City, the Stillwater regional.
Yeah,
that's a lot of baseball left. I get that, but right now they're trending in the wrong direction. They can turn it around by taking 2 or 3 from Vandy,
and I think that's the great opportunity, too, is that they get to play in front of the home fans this weekend, and that should help them. I think, you know, Vandy, as we've mentioned it, Vandy's not – it's tough to say they're not as good as some of the past Vandy teams, although I think it's fair. They don't have, look, Rocker and Leiter 1 and 2, remember, like those Vandy teams did. But they can really pitch, as we've known them to be, and their lineup's got a couple of guys that are really scary. So I think if you get a series win over Vanderbilt, you really start to ease some of the pressure for a while. But yeah, if you lose 2 out of 3, or God forbid you get swept this weekend, there's gonna be a lot of questions asked. And I do think, to answer his question in a long roundabout way, yeah, this is a massive series for them, way bigger than the Florida series was a couple weeks ago. This one's really, really important.
It's a huge series. And
it starts tonight, by the way, 6 o'clock. You'll be able to hear it right here on ESPN 137 Lafayette. Which, again, they do those SEC series sometimes that are tough to keep track of, but they will be playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday. No Sunday game this week. Second straight week. Last week, obviously, because of Easter, but this time around, it's just those TV slots that the SEC likes to get in the way of sometimes.
And our guy, Matt Miguez, will have all the coverage for you on ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. He'll be in attendance for tonight's opening game of the series against the Vanderbilt Commodores. A lot of LSU fans like to call them Commodores, by the way, which is always somewhat funny. Childish, but funny at the same hand. Also, this is also the same fan base, Vanderbilt, who has the Vandy Whistler.
I was going
to
say.
So I think you're allowed to call the Commodores the Commodores.
Is he going
to
be in attendance tonight? I would guess not.
I don't think he travels.
There was a fan at the Astros game. Sounded like a young fan, who was screaming at the top of his lungs for the entirety of the broadcast. And the funny thing is, I listened to the radio broadcast one day and then the TV broadcast the next. This was the Yankee series after we had left Houston. And he was coming through on both broadcasts, chanting, "Let's go Astros," throughout the game in the highest pitch voice I've ever heard. And it was piercing over the beautiful sounds of Robert Ford and Steve Sparks, and then on the TV broadcast as well with Blummer and Todd Callis. That kid has got to have a sore throat by this point. is all. It's got to be. I mean, it was unbelievable the amount that he kept it up with. I mean, it was just sheer passion. So I appreciate that as a young Astros fan that I'm sure he is. But it was unbelievable, and I can't lie. It was obviously very distracting when you're trying to listen to the broadcast.
We got to have a momentary distraction ourselves. We got to take a time out, right? But when we come back, we'll talk Saints Pels with Les East from KristenCitySports.com. That's coming up next right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Oh, we head out to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Welcome on our next guest. He is the LSWA Sports Writer of the Year, one of the more respected beat reporters and sports journalists our state has ever produced. He covers the Saints and the Pels for CrescentCitySports.com. It's our good friend and diehard Cincinnati Reds fan, Les East, joins us now. Les, good day to you, brother. How are you, my bud?
Doing well, Raymond. That was quite the introduction. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Look, for a small fee, I can just simply walk around to every event you go cover and announce that when we walk into the building, if you'd like.
Yeah, I think so. And if you could do so with a bullhorn, that would be appreciated.
I can do that too, bud. All right, so let's start with the Pels. And I guess since they found out that I would be coming and covering their game on Friday night against the Spurs, my first trip down to the Smoothie King Center this season, that they decided to go ahead and just start losing games left and right. What do you make of what ails Willie Green's team?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. One, they've played a series of teams with winning records during this homestand. They've lost 4 out of 5. They've all been playoff teams and some of the elite teams in the NBA. I think the absence of Brandon Ingram has hurt on the offensive end. It's enabled teams to devote more attention to Zion Williamson without fear of getting burned as badly as they would if Ingram were out there. And then on top of that, they haven't played as well. And then those other two things, I think, are factors in that. But, with Ingram out and with the level of competition going up, the guys who are out there need to respond and play better than they have. So I don't think they've handled a difficult situation as well as they could have, because they haven't played 48 good minutes in except for maybe the Milwaukee game. But the level of competition and the absence of Ingram, I think, are both major factors in that. We should get an update on Ingram tomorrow, but I don't think his return is imminent.
So we're going to get an update on B.I.'s status. What does your gut tell you? Does it tell you that we are not going to see him until the postseason?
Well, they said, after he got hurt in Orlando, he got hurt on a Thursday night 2 weeks ago. They evaluated him on Friday, said he'd be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So I'm making the assumption that tomorrow will be an update. I don't know that it's going to be anything specific. I think there's a good chance we won't see him until the postseason. I believe the regular season ends a week from Sunday. So I don't know that he's going to be ready by then, but hopefully we'll get more clarity tomorrow. But I think at this point we have to assume that he's not going to be, certainly not going to be available tomorrow, and probably not during the upcoming road trip. But we'll see. Maybe there'll be good news tomorrow.
What do you make of Willie Green and his usage of Valanciunas, especially late in games where he seemingly just has him rotting at the end of the bench?
Yeah, I think Willie is struggling to find the best way to handle the center position, and I think a lot of that has been driven by matchups in these games that they've played. A while back he started going to Larry Nance Jr. to start the second half of games because of matchup situations. And I just don't think it's worked out that well, putting Valanciunas on the bench more and playing Nance more and going with a smaller lineup has not really made a huge difference for them. And yet when Valanciunas has been in there, there have been times when they've struggled because he's a big, strong guy who rebounds the ball well. He's an offensive threat in the low post, and he has a lot to offer. But defensively, he's not as athletic as some of the other guys. They're not able to switch as effectively as they can when they have a more athletic center out there. So, you know, I think that they're trying to find the answer at the center position based on the matchups that they've had, and it just hasn't gone well. And I think that's kind of driven by the fact that they don't have the type of center that they would prefer to have. They would like to have somebody bigger than Larry Nance Jr. and somebody more athletic than Jonas Valanciunas, and they're trying to figure out a way to utilize those two different skill sets to try and get what they're looking for. And when you're playing the better teams in the NBA, that's apparently not going to work.
We're speaking with Les East of Crescent City Sports. You know, Les, for a while, our conversations with you and just, you know, throughout our show were about the Pels sitting in that 4-6 spot and kind of what the matchup would look like in the playoffs. And now we kind of have to get back into play-in tournament conversations, which aren't all that fun to have. They're now 7th, but Sacramento's only a half game back. They're tied technically with Phoenix, but lost the tiebreaker. I know the Suns have a gauntlet of a schedule left. They play nothing but top five teams in their respective conferences the rest of the way. What do you think the ceiling and the floor is for the Pels now when it comes to the Western Conference standings with 6 games left?
Well, I think both the ceiling and the floor have been lowered over the last week or two. They were briefly for 24 or 48 hours a couple of weeks ago, they were in 4th place. They've mostly been in 5th. And now have slipped to 6th, and they're closer to 7th and 8th than they are to 4th. And so they do have the tiebreaker with Sacramento. So if you're going to tie somebody for that 6th spot, you certainly want it to be Sacramento and not Phoenix. The game Sunday in Phoenix is huge. They've lost the season series. There's nothing they can do about that. But if they were to beat the Suns, then that would keep them ahead of the Suns, and they would just have to match them the rest of the way. And as you mentioned, it's a really difficult schedule for Phoenix down the stretch. So, you know, where they wind up in relation to the Suns, I think, will largely be determined by the game Sunday in Phoenix. And given the way the two games in New Orleans have gone, that doesn't look real promising for the Pelicans. Devin Booker probably will have 50-plus points, as he routinely has against the Pelicans. So that's a huge game. The play-in is a very real possibility at this point, and I think 5 or 6 is the best they can hope for. But I think at this point, if they could wind up just in 6th place, they would have to be very happy with that, because the prospect of being worse than that, I think, is greater than the prospect of being better than that.
Les, I did want to ask you, before we switch over to the Saints, I want to ask you about what you've seen from Dyson Daniels over the last couple of games, because it seems like he's gotten more and more comfortable, especially with his jump shot. I remember when he first got drafted, it looked like he wasn't very comfortable shooting from 3, but looking at least last game, last night specifically, he looks a lot more comfortable and looks like a lot smoother of a shot.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think there were times even before he got hurt a while back where his confidence in his outside shot didn't seem to be at a very high level. His first game back, which I believe was Saturday against the Celtics, he didn't look real confident then either, which is understandable after being sidelined for several weeks and having his knee scoped. But these last couple of games, his confidence level looks much higher. His shot has been much more effective. And, you know, his outside shooting has always been a little bit inconsistent, but if what we've seen these last two games is something he can maintain with some regularity going down the stretch, I think that's going to be really helpful for them, because they're going to need everything they can get from their top 9 or 10 players.
And then moving over to the Black and Gold, they did make a huge signing today. It looks like they might be able to go to the Super Bowl now. They did sign Kalicki Hudson, who's predominantly a special team linebacker. What did you make of the signing? Do you think that he has like a realistic shot of making this roster, or do you think he's going to be more of a camp body?
No, I think he has a chance of making the roster. This tells me with the signing that they made with the linebacker from the Chiefs, that and they also signed the wide receiver from the Bengals, who's mostly a special teams guy. It tells me that they're thinking about defensively, one, maybe playing three linebackers more than they have in recent seasons. They've tended to play five DBs more than three linebackers. And their run defense has not been quite as good the last year or two as it was prior to that. So I think maybe they're looking at getting a little more physical, a little more conventional with their defensive sets. And I also think it looks like they're putting an emphasis on upgrading the special teams, which I didn't really anticipate, because generally, since Darren Rizzi and Phil Galliano have been running the special teams, they have been one of the better units in the NFL. But it looks like they believe they can get even better on special teams. So this is not a real exciting signing, but at the same time, I think it sort of fits a couple of patterns that they've been following here, and that is to upgrade the defensive depth and also the special teams.
If that is the case, that they do go more to a 4-3 defense as their base instead of going with more of a nickel where they have five DBs, do you think that that means that there's really no other signings that they'll make when it comes to the secondary, because you'll have more versatility with having either Alante go up top at the safety or position, and then you still have plenty of opportunities for Jordan Howden to be a safety as well, since you released Marcus May?
Yeah, it does make it possible that depth in the secondary isn't quite as big a priority as maybe has been in the past, but I still think they're of the mindset that you can never have enough defensive backs. And if they do play more three linebacker sets, they're still going to be playing a lot of five and six DBs, and they're hopeful of putting teams in more obvious passing situations than they've been able to do the last couple of years, in which case they will go to five DBs more out of a situational thing rather than a regular approach. So I still think they will address the secondary depth at some point, whether it's the draft or free agency, but maybe it's not quite as urgent as it might have seemed with the May releasing, now that they've upgraded the depth at linebacker.
And I'm not too sure how big or how significant of a signing this is, but late last week they'd signed Charlie Smith, another kicker, to the roster, but it was a 3-year deal. I'm kind of wondering, do you think that this is going to be a real competition, like, Blake Groupie, you better get it together, or do you think that this is just more of a light competition?
No, I think it's a real competition. I don't think they've given up on Blake Groupie by any means. He had some good moments last year. He also had a couple of really bad moments. And I think they have confidence in him, but at the same time, they're looking for more consistency from that position, and they certainly think competition with a kicker who's that young can help spur that. So I think it's a legitimate competition. I have no idea how it will play out. I think they feel it is in Groupie's best interest and their best interest to make him fight for the job.
It's no question or no competition whenever we get you on. Les, appreciate you coming on. We'll get you on next week.
Thanks, guys.
And that was Les East of Crescent City Sports. We're going to go ahead and take a quick timeout and wrap up today's show right after this.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Poll question of the day. We had asked you on Facebook and on X, will the Pelicans avoid the play-in tournament? 70% of you have said no. But the other 30%, they are optimistic and they said yes. No new comments so far. Mr. RP3, big, bald, bearded, and beautiful one.
That's disappointing. That's disappointing. But we did have good calls today.
We did. We had some good calls.
You know, when you guys don't call the Mike's Marine hotline, you know, if we don't hear from you guys after a few days, it makes us feel a certain way. You know, we're like, hey.
We worry about you.
You know, we do worry about you. I mean, we get it. You're trying to squeeze in lunch while at your job and trying to listen to our shenanigans. But we appreciate you nonetheless. Keep those votes coming. Keep those comments coming as well.
And James Mesh will share them throughout the remainder of today's show and the Jordy Holberg show, which is coming up next. More importantly, that's when he'll be sharing. He won't have time to share it down in the next 2 minutes. just to be clear.
I'll just do it. I'll reiterate it again.
How about Friday? Back at walk-ons tomorrow, right?
On Collie Saloon. Come out and see us. We'll be there from 11 to 1.
We will. We got a lot to talk about, too. Weekend to preview, Final Four as well.
Final Fours, plural.
Multiple of them in a couple of big-time baseball series, as we've already mentioned. Not only Astros, but Cajuns. LSU will have one game down, two more to go. It'll be a lot to talk about.
We'll have Talkin' McNeese with our buddy Jim Cozzolo from the Lake Charles American Press. He's scheduled to join us, as well as Jake Madison from the Locked On Pellies podcast. Give us a big preview of that game I'll be witnessing in person between the Pels and the Spurs. Wimby time. I'm excited. I'm excited to go see Wimby. Yeah! Yes, that'll be all tomorrow, though. And that's how we're going to get you geared up for your weekend. James Mesh, anything else you want to share with the people before we leave? I mean, you were excellent today. You went above and beyond.
Thank you. I tried my best.
Do you feel any better now that our special we had a great guest today.
We did. Jack Kavovit, mm-hmm. Final Four. Got a little McNeese softball in there. You weren't expecting that.
Oh, no,
weren't
you? You weren't planning for that.
And Les East, Crescent City Sports, the award-winning columnist.
Also a surprise pop-in guest, Hattie Elise Parch.
HP3.
Oh, yeah. She came by. She was chopping it up out of school this week for the holidays. And she made James Mesh feel like he was king of the world because she once again reinforced the proclamation, that has been made on this show that James Mesh has the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi. And then we said, hey, who has better hair, James Mesh or Matt Miguez? And she laughed and said, James Mesh. And then said, please don't tell Matt Miguez that, because she didn't want to hurt Miguez's feelings. Which shows that she has a big heart and she cares for people.
But we told him.
We
told him that next commercial break.
Justin Lauer, 6-under at the Valero Texas Open. Hot start to the day. Had that tough early morning tee time. Did not affect him. He is 6-under par. Got a 2-shot lead over Danny McCarthy. Max Homa in the mix as well.
He's trying to get locked in for the Masters next week.
Absolutely. Whole host of players still yet to tee off, including a featured pairing, which should be a lot of fun, that features Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, and Tommy Fleetwood. They're getting it going in about 10 minutes.
That's going to do it for today's show. We'll be back on tomorrow, 11 to 1, live from Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon. Swing by and join us for your lunch. We'd love to have you. But until then, be safe out there. Be kind to one another. The Jordy Holberg Show with the blonde bomber himself, Uncle Jordy. What's up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.